Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Kind of breaking news here on Zero Hedge. Mexico has announced that they will issue a central bank digital currency in 2024. So this is something that I've been talking about on my channel, the George Gammon channel, since it really started pretty much 2019, summer of 2019. And as you guys know, back then, everyone was calling me a tinfoil hatter and a conspiracy theorist and blah, blah, blah. I said, no, let's just look at the writings on the wall. This is the direction they'll go for XYZ reason. But a lot of people assume that the only problem with a central bank digital currency is it gives the government the ability to spy on every single one of your transactions and to control the transactions, to control the demand and maybe the supply side of the equation through the extension of credit. And while that is true, it's far more nefarious than that. And there's much more downside. And unless you really understand the banking system, and maybe even more specifically the euro dollar system, because it's cashless, and unless you've really thought through the constraints of the current banking system and the old banking system under the gold standard, I don't really think you fully understand the downside risk of having a central bank digital currency. So I wanted to walk through that on this video. And then I also want to suggest to everyone here that they listen to my good friend Robert Breedlove's podcast and the series he has done with Jeff Snyder. And I can't remember which episode it was, but they articulate very well the constraints that banks had in the past and maybe some of the constraints they do not have now and the problems that may lead to in the future. But I want to get into that in more detail so you guys can start thinking about it and so it's on your radar, so you can fully understand the risks of having not just a central bank digital currency, but maybe even more importantly, a ban on cash, a cashless society. A cashless society, in my opinion, it in and of itself is even more dangerous than a central bank digital currency. And when you put them together, then they're incredibly dangerous. But if I had to choose between a central bank digital currency and a cashless society, believe it or not, I'd probably choose a central bank digital currency. But let's get into why. So here's the headline. Whoops. I don't know what I just did right there. And this is from Zero Hedge. Bank of Mexico announces it will own central bank digital currency by 2024. And so I don't know what by own central bank digital currency. A cashless society is on the way, but the U.S. lags in adoption and regulation. And I don't think they're going to lag for too long. That's for sure. And I don't know that they are lagging in adoption and regulation, because I think in incentive, they're probably ahead of Mexico from the standpoint of stimulus and UBI. To my knowledge, Mexico hasn't talked about UBI, and I don't think, well, I know for sure they didn't do the amount of stimulus or sending out the stimmy checks and the PPP loans and whatnot, and the child tax credit. And I know they didn't do it to the same degree. Now, whether they did it or not, I don't know, but I would be very surprised if they did. So my point is, because we've done this and now moving forward, there's a higher probability that it will become permanent. This gives us a further incentive above and beyond what Mexico has to implement a central bank digital currency, because that would be a way for us to streamline those payments directly to the individuals, because they would all have an account with the Federal Reserve. So their dollars would then be a liability of the Fed instead of a liability of the commercial banking system, or it might be half and half for a certain percentage. So let's keep moving on. The Bank of Mexico plans to put its own digital currency in circulation by 2024 to use the latest payment technology to foment financial inclusion. Yeah, see, this is, I think, the words they're using. Here, let's use a quote from the president. To use these new technologies and latest generation payment infrastructure as valuable options to avoid financial or to advance financial inclusion in the country. Who else have you heard say this? Who else have you heard use these exact words? Financial inclusion. To advance financial inclusion. Well, I'm assuming you guys haven't watched every one of my videos. So I'll tell you, Klaus, the IMF, this is one of their battle cries. They say it's stakeholder capitalism, and they need more financial inclusion for the unbanked citizens. They're somehow claiming that because people are unbanked, that this gives them an incredible disadvantage, and they're never, ever, ever going to get out of the ranks of the impoverished and the poverty-stricken unless they actually have a bank account. As if having a bank account is a prerequisite to, you know, making more money or something. I understand that the extension of credit and whatnot can assist, but it's by no means the only factor that goes into someone producing more than they consume. So the president, you can see, they're doing this in the name of quote-unquote financial inclusion, which is straight out of the Klaus playbook and straight out of the IMF playbook. And what are the chances that this is their main motivation? Probably zero. but to give them the benefit of the doubt, I'll say it's 1%. So there's a 99% chance that this is not their main motivation. Their main motivation is to collect more taxes and to monitor transactions, but maybe even more so to create a system that is cashless. Therefore, they can ban cash. And what does that do to the banking system? It makes it so we could move into an era where banks, especially if we're consolidating the number of banks, the opposite of what Richard Werner suggests, who's going to be at Rebel Capitalist Pro or Rebel Capitalist Live. So if you haven't got your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live, there's only a week before the event. So make sure you go to Rebel Capitalist Live to get your tickets. But Richard Werner teaches us that the ideal is to have more banks, a decentralized approach to banks. But if we have a more consolidated, more central planning without cash, this puts us into an environment where the banks might not be able to go out of business. A bank might not be able to go bust. It may be impossible. Or it I shouldn't say impossible. It may be unrealistic for a bank to go out of business. Why does this matter? Well, they can create infinite amount of currency units, because you guys know from watching my channel that banks create dollars or create I don't want to use, I want to use the correct terms here. Banks don't create cash. They don't create money. What they do create is a dollar liability that's an asset for the debtor, or excuse me, an asset for an individual, a non-bank entity in the real economy. So when the easiest way to explain it is when a bank extends credit, or when they give a loan for $500,000, those $500,000 did not exist before. Now, they didn't create 500,000 paper dollars. And that's a big, big difference. And we'll get into why in just a moment. But they just created an additional $500,000 electronic liability for the bank. So that goes onto the liability side of the bank's balance sheet. And once the borrower pays this, the seller, assuming they're buying a house, then that those $500,000 become an asset on the balance sheet of the seller. But the, all so all they're doing is they're just creating dollar assets and dollar liabilities. They are not creating green pieces of paper. They cannot create green pieces of paper. They have to get that from the Federal Reserve. And that's a huge, huge distinguishing factor. That's massively important. But for those of you who understand that they're the ones that are creating these dollar-denominated liabilities, or in this case, peso-denominated liabilities, or euro-dollar, not euro-dollar, but euro liabilities or yen liabilities, this is really an important point. So let's just for a moment think through what would happen if there was no cash, right? If there was no cash whatsoever. Well, if there was no cash, what would happen is, we'll use the example of that $500,000 loan. That $500,000 loan goes to the debtor, the person borrowing. They send the $500,000 to the seller. Let's say the seller is with another bank. Okay, so then the bank who issued the loan has to take the $500,000 liability from their balance sheet, and they have to send that $500,000 liability to the seller's bank. Let's just say it's different. Let's say you start with Bank of America and it goes over to Wells Fargo. Well, now what Bank of America has done is they've given Wells Fargo a $500,000 liability. And again, that's the $500,000 asset for the seller. Well, why would Wells Fargo take that? You can take it to an extreme. And what if they transferred them a $10 trillion liability? Well, then Wells Fargo would technically be bust. So the only reason for Wells Fargo to take that $500,000 liability is if Bank of America also sends them a corresponding asset. So let's just say that they send them bank reserves, right? But they don't necessarily have to send them bank reserves. So what happens often within the banking system is they keep what I call a ghost ledger. So they could settle up at the end of the day, they could settle up at the end of 2 weeks, what have you. So let's just say for a moment that Bank of America didn't have the $500,000 worth of assets. They didn't have the $500,000 of bank reserves. But they still transfer them the $500,000 liability. Well, what Wells Fargo can do is they can issue them a $500,000 credit, or they can extend $500,000 of credit to Bank of America. So now what happens? Well, they've basically lent Bank of America the $500,000 that they didn't have. Therefore, that loan becomes an asset to match up with the liability that Bank of America sent them in the first place. And now that they've Wells Fargo or Bank of America, excuse me, the original bank, now has an additional $500,000 liability, but it's off balance sheet. It's on the ghost ledger. It's just between the two banks. So it's completely off balance sheet. You see? So my point there is they didn't even have to have an asset in order to transfer the asset to Wells Fargo in the first place, because Wells Fargo, if they trusted Bank of America, they could just extend them a loan for the $500,000 asset, and that would become a liability for Bank of America, which would be on the ghost ledger, so it would be off balance sheet.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Another way of looking at it, just to try to keep it in simple terms, is if let's say you were to give your buddy you just owe your buddy money, and so he's extending you credit. So if he says, okay, I'll pay you $100 on Tuesday, and you say, okay, Steve, that sounds good. So that $100 IOU for Tuesday, that becomes an asset on your balance sheet. You've extended basically a loan or a credit to Steve that he can pay you back, or he can pay you on a given day in the future. That's exactly what Wells Fargo does to Bank of America if Bank of America didn't have the bank reserves to transfer them in the first place. That's all I'm talking about, you see. So why does that matter? Because using this simple example between you and your buddy Steve, the only reason Steve would ever have to pay you back is if you said, Steve, no, you have to pay me back. If it came Tuesday and you said, well, just go ahead and pay me Thursday, then Thursday comes, oh, you can just go ahead and pay me next month. Oh, you can just go ahead and pay me next year. And then Steve says, okay, hey, listen, why don't I just never pay you, but then you never have to pay me. So if you transfer me a liability, I'm not going to make you transfer me any assets. And then if I transfer you a liability, then you never have to pay me, or I never have to pay you assets. And we never have to trade assets back and forth. That's the bottom line. All we have to do is just trade liabilities back and forth, and nobody's going to know the difference. And it's going to be totally off balance sheet. And then what happens, let's just say, those banks never get paid back. I'm sorry, not between the banks themselves, but the mortgage. So now we're talking about the original mortgage that was issued to the borrower to buy the house. Let's say that person never pays back the lender. They never pay back the bank. Okay. So then you would say, well, my gosh, that really hurts them because it reduces the asset side of their balance sheet, because that loan, they have to write it off. Okay. But that's only in a world where the banks need assets. And the only reason they need assets is to transfer liabilities to one another. So if they just agree to transfer liabilities to one another with no assets, then there are no assets required. Unless there's a constraint. You see, remember that those liabilities are an asset of a non-bank entity in the real economy. So let's just go back to the gold standard. Let's say that that person who had the $500,000 that was given to them electronically for the house, which was a $500,000 liability on Wells Fargo's balance sheet, they said, actually, I want my gold. So they go down to the bank and they say, I want my $500,000 in gold. Uh-oh. Now Wells Fargo actually needs assets on their balance sheet, don't they? They need that gold. They cannot create the gold. And that gold can't be created between banks on the ghost ledger. You see where I'm going with this? And gold is a fantastic constraint because the banks cannot create it. No one can create it. They actually have to have the physical gold if those dollars are an IOU for gold. You see? Bitcoin would be the same thing. It's something that the banks cannot create. But to a certain degree, and I know this isn't as good, but it's better than nothing. Cash is also a constraint. Because let's go back to our original example. And let's just assume that the seller of the house had the $500,000 liability as well as Fargo. And then they went to the bank and said, okay, I want my cash. I want $500,000 in green pieces of paper. What's Wells Fargo going to do? Well, now all of a sudden, theoretically, they have to give them that cash. In other words, they have to give them what should have been a $500,000 asset on their balance sheet. Well, if Bank of America never gave them an asset other than just an IOU, or was an extension of credit, then they wouldn't have what the asset on the balance sheet of the non-bank entity was redeemable for. And therefore, this gives a constraint on the banking system. But what happens when you completely eliminate cash? So that seller of the home could never, ever go down to the bank and redeem their asset for anything other than an electronic bank liability. Now, all of a sudden, you create an environment that I just tried to explain, a lot easier with a whiteboard, of course, but hopefully most of you guys are following that. You create a system where the banks are not constrained by anything, zero. And if they're not constrained by anything, the only thing that could make them go bust is just if they didn't agree on the rules that the banks have amongst one another. But if they all agree on the rules that they're not going to use assets anymore, they're only going to use liability, they're only going to transfer liabilities back and forth, how do they go out of business? Because even if they're negative equity, it doesn't matter anymore. Because the only asset that they're trading back and forth with one another isn't even an asset. It's just an electronic IOU. One bank saying, I owe you this. The other bank saying, I owe you that. And them saying, okay, whatever. We're never going to actually execute the transaction. We're just going to say, I owe you this for... You know, I'll pay you in 1,000 years. Okay, I owe you this. I'll pay you in 1,000 years. What are you going to pay me? I will just pay you these electronic things that we've been going back and forth because there's no cash, there's no gold, there's no Bitcoin, there's no nothing. So it becomes to just kind of a wink, wink and a nod, nod between the banks. My point there is it doesn't matter if they have negative equity. They essentially become like the central bank in that they can't go bust. So why does that matter? You say, well, you know, George, then there's the demand side of the equation. They can't just take their balance sheet to infinity and beyond because because at a certain point, the only way they're making money is if they're if the people that are paying them back with interest. So even if they're extending all these loans, they're going, you know, there's nothing that's constraining the amount of lending they're doing. If they're not being paid back, then it just doesn't really matter. They're not able to make more money. They're not able to make more, electronic liabilities or more dollars. Let's say it that way. Whatever a dollar is, for heaven's sakes. You know, when I explain it like this, now you understand why Chris Cole, who's going to be at Rebel Capitalist Live, always says the dollar is nothing more than a thought abstraction. And now you know why. But my point there is that, you say, George, the demand side of the equation, the demand for loans, meaning, is still going to constrain the amount of lending they can do. But you're not getting the full point. Because now what those banks would be able to do is lend to whomever they wanted to, and they wouldn't be constrained by the person's ability to pay them back. Again, just like a central bank. So they could start lending based on whatever the prevailing political narrative was. So if the politicians come out and say, oh, you shouldn't be lending to those people that aren't wearing masks, then that's what happens. Because they don't need to be paid back. It doesn't matter. Because there's no assets going back and forth. There's just liabilities. This is, and then it becomes more about a social score instead of a credit score. And this is an issue that we could see with a central bank digital currency as well. But if we ban cash, we technically don't even have to get to a central bank digital currency before the commercial banks themselves could start issuing credit exclusively based on a credit score instead of your ability to actually pay them back. And that's why a ban on cash is so incredibly dangerous. And when you combine it with the central bank digital currency, that's the ultimate Orwellian tool, whatever you want to call it, for power and control, to where our entire globe, the entire planet, is controlled and dominated by banksters. So you can find the rest of this article on Zero Hedge. Pretty much they're just talking about how it's going to be great for banking because it brings everyone into the banking system. But we all know that's nonsense. The probability is they're doing this to micromanage who is getting money, who isn't getting money, who is it getting credit, who isn't, and then maybe micromanaging the demand. So therefore, as an example, if you know they wanted to favor a certain industry, then you just couldn't spend your central bank digital currency on an industry that was out of favor, i.e. coal, i.e. gas, i.e. diesel. You know, you could only spend it on buying, let's say, electric cars or something like that. Or you could only spend a percentage on gas and diesel. So they could micromanage the demand side of the equation. They could micromanage the supply side of the equation by the extension of credit. And you know all the other Orwellian factors. But the thing that most people miss, and probably the biggest variable here, and the biggest factor that would impact our freedom, is the fact that this could take us into an environment, if they ban cash, where there is zero constraint on the banking system. And therefore, the banking system, the banks themselves, it's almost impossible for them to go out of business. And they start to quite literally control the global economy, even more so and to a greater extent than they do today. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Make sure that you're always standing up for freedom, liberty, free market, capitalism. Definitely check out Rebel Capitalist Live at rebelcapitalistlive.com, and we'll see you in the next video.